I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. The Vatican said Pope Francis suffered two new acute respiratory crises on Monday. AP correspondent Nicole Winfield has more from Vatican City.
Vatican is reporting another setback in Pope Francis's recovery from pneumonia. Doctors say they had to put him back on the non-invasive mechanical ventilation. They also had to perform what's called a bronchoscopy, where they snaked a tube down into his airways, guided by a camera, to suction out the mucus and secretions that he's not been able to cough out on his own. They speak of these episodes as in the past tense, meaning they are over, but they are still saying that his prognosis is guarded, meaning he is not out of danger.
AP correspondent Nicole Winfield. A White House official says President Donald Trump on Monday directed a pause to U.S. assistance to Ukraine after last week's Oval Office meeting. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Vladimir Zelensky says the end is still very, very far away. On social media, President Trump slammed that as the worst thing Zelensky could have said. And hours later at the White House,
he better not be right about that.
The Brookings Institution's Angela Stent, a former U.S. intelligence officer for Russia who has written a book about Vladimir Putin, says the Russian leader has no interest in negotiating a deal to stop the fighting right now, and first wants to watch U.S.-European relations implode.
And it will be much easier then for Russia to win this war on its own terms.
But the president's focused on Zelensky, saying if someone doesn't want to make a deal,
that person won't be around very long. That person will not be listened to very long.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. The future of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is in doubt after Israel stopped all aid from entering the Gaza Strip. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
Israel's announcement that it is blocking humanitarian aid from entering Gaza through its checkpoints has caused fear and panic buying in Gaza's markets. The move comes as the Muslim holy month of Ramadan begins, when Muslims fast from dawn to dusk and share festive meals in the evenings. This year's Ramadan is taking place amid massive destruction caused by 16 months of heavy fighting between Israel and the terrorist-designated Hamas. Hamas seized 250 hostages in an October 7, 2023 terror attack on southern Israel, sparking a war that has left tens of thousands of Palestinians and more than 1,700 Israelis dead. So far, 147 hostages have been returned to Israel alive, most in two ceasefire deals with Hamas. Israel has also released some 2,000 Palestinian prisoners. Hamas, Arab states, the United Nations, and human rights groups have condemned the Israeli blockage of aid shipments, accusing Israel of violating the ceasefire terms. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
President Trump said on Monday that 25% tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico will go into effect on Tuesday. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
U.S. stocks plunged after Trump said there was no room left for a deal that would avert the tariffs by halting the flow of fentanyl into the United States.
On the tariffs, is there any room left for Canada and Mexico to make a deal before midnight?
No room left for Mexico or for Canada. No, the tariffs, they're all set.
Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum on Monday told reporters, quote, "We maintained communication. We have made the agreements and the necessary coordination." But she said the decision to impose tariffs rested with Trump and said Mexico was ready with a plan B, C, and D. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on Sunday told reporters Canada should not be blamed for the amount of fentanyl in the U.S.
We had about less than 1% when we first started talking about this many months ago. That number is significantly lower than that, even now.
Economists say that if Trump imposes 25% tariffs, which cover more than $900 billion worth of annual imports from Canada and Mexico, it would deal a serious setback to the highly integrated North American economy.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gabon's military leader announces the run for the presidency in April's elections.
I'm disappointed as a Gabonese because he's not a man of his word. Because when he took power, he said that he will put Gabon on track, and then after that, he will give the power back to the civilians.
Namibia lays to rest its founding president. Guinean government reduces food prices during Ramadan, but without success. Humanitarian organizations are looking for non-traditional funding to ease the pain of those in conflict areas. ECOWAS explains the reason for a weekend mission to Guinea-Bissau.
The bone of contention today is the debate between President Sisoko Embalo and the opposition about the legality of his continued stay in power.
And we'll hear the views of some Nigerians on what they say President Trump and U.S. lawmakers should know about Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Gabonese rights and democracy activist says he's disappointed in the decision by military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema to seek the presidency. Frank Jorgtin says Oligui did not keep the promise he made to the people when he overthrew Ali Bongo. Gabon will hold presidential elections on April 22nd to end military rule, which began with the coup on April 30, 2023. Oligui Nguema announced on Monday that he is running for president because the Gabonese public is urging him to. Jorgtin tells me that the way things look now, Oligui could win because he was able to cleverly sell himself as the savior of the people.
I'm disappointed as a Gabonese because he's not a man of his word. Because when he took power, he said that he will put Gabon on track, and then after that, he will give the power back to the civilian. He also said that everyone who is a minister in his government, in the government of transition, will not be able to run. But early on his government, he was the minister of defense and the minister of interior, even though he didn't stay there long, but he was minister. So he went against the law that he himself established. So for me, it's a sad day, but I'm not surprised.
What are you hearing in terms of the opposition political parties? What are they saying? According to some of the sources I'm talking to, some of them have already begun to line up behind the decision that they are going to support him.
Yes, I mean, like, you have two type of opposition. For me, you have an opposition for and you have an opposition against. And I think that, yes, Oligui Nguema, with his clout, with his power, I mean, he tried to bring as much people as possible and try to make sure that he will be the next president of Gabon. And, of course, what he really wants, he wants to be elected. But there is a remnant. There is some politicians. Unfortunately, the one who is shining a little bit right now, he was in the government of Ali Bongo. So because of that, the attractiveness of that particular individual from the people of Gabon is limited. But he's speaking, and what he's saying is resonating with people. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but the way things are looking at right now, I believe Oligui will win.
General Oligui says that he is only responding to the appeal of the Gabonese people because they want him to be president.
I do not agree with that statement. I think what happened is he is a military guy, and in the African Union, on the chart, it said specifically that people who take power by force, by military coup, should not run for president. So what Oligui Nguema did in the last 18 months is to go all over Gabon, spend a lot of money to give the impression that people are pushing him to become president and that he's responding to the will of the people. I don't buy it. I don't think that's the reality. I think he's just doing that for the international community to let them know that, yes, I'm a military guy, but my people want me. So that's what I think is going on. But I don't really think that the Gabonese themselves have decided that we want to support Oligui Nguema. I think that they are coerced to say that. It's good to say that. It's beneficial for you. Then job will be probably given to you. Money will be given to you. Position. And then there's advantages right now to be on the side of Oligui Nguema.
Even if the remaining opposition decide they are going to contest the election is April 12, 2025. Do you think they will have enough time to prepare themselves?
Well, they don't have a choice. The election is around the corner, and they have to stand up for what they believe, and they have to give to the Gabonese people the vision of Gabon. I think it's important for the Gabonese people to have an alternative. I believe that democracies thrive when you always have different opinions, different ways of governing the country.
Frank Joktin is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist, and he was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. An official of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has been explaining the purpose of a delegation to Guinea-Bissau over the weekend. Abdel Fattah Moussa, ECOWAS's Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security, says the delegation's purpose was to seek a consensus between President Umaro Sissoko Mbalo and the opposition on when to hold peaceful and credible elections. He tells me that the bone of contention is the legality of what opponents say is Mbalo's continued stay in power.
The bone of contention today is the debate between President Sissoko Mbalo, the president of the country, and the opposition about the legality of his continued stay in power. According to them, his mandate expired on the 27th of February, and that after that, they wouldn't recognize him as a president. The president, on the other hand, says that no, his mandate actually expires somewhere, you know, next year. So he has to hold elections closer to that year. That is the immediate cause of the situation in the country. That is number one. Number two, the institutions in the country have come under immense strain. You know, the parliament has been dissolved by the president for over 1 year now. And the opposition says, according to the constitution, you cannot dissolve a parliament 6 months after elections.
ECOWAS sent a delegation there. What was the purpose of the delegation?
At the last summit of ECOWAS, that was last December, it was decided that ECOWAS would deploy a high-level mission to the country. And the commission is just following the instructions of the authority of heads of state of the region. So this mission was deployed in the country from about the 21st of February to meet with all stakeholders, because for us there was an evolving crisis in the country, and there is a logjam as far as the elections are concerned, misunderstanding and all that. So the mission was to meet all stakeholders with a view to bringing them together to come to a consensus so that we do not leave a power vacuum in the country, and that they all agree on a reasonable time frame for the holding of legislative and presidential elections in the country.
What is the outcome of the mission?
Yeah, James, such missions in the country, their outcome is always confidential. So the mission is presenting its report to the president of the commission, and it is up to the president of the commission, in consultation with the chair of authority, to decide on the next steps. But what I can tell you is that the proposal of the mission, having met everybody, is to seek a consensus in the country so that we can hold peaceful and credible elections in the nearest future possible.
President Umaro was chair of ECOWAS before, and do you find, or does the community feel, that he is trying to hang on to power?
No, it is not a question of hanging on to power. You remember, President Mbalo is just completing his first term. The constitution allows for 2 terms for the president. He has completed only 1 term. It is about setting the date and the conditions for elections to either replace him or to extend his tenure by another mandate.
Abdel Fattah Moussa is the Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. He was speaking with us from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 4th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Special Representative of the UN Secretary General on Sexual Violence in Conflict says increases in military spending worldwide is leading to more conflicts in the world, with conflicts in Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo some of the worst for women and children needing billions of dollars. As Columbus Mavunga reports, humanitarian organizations are looking for non-traditional funding, such as in Saudi Arabia, to come in and ease the pain of those in conflict areas.
Speaking to VOA at the International Humanitarian Forum in Riyadh, Pramila Patten, the United Nations Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict, said she is worried by the impact of global conflicts on women and children.
These are uniquely dangerous times with the record number of conflict, massive displacement, runaway military spending, and the divisive rhetoric and the impact it's having on a number of the most vulnerable are the women and the children, but also ethnic minorities. We should invest more in prevention. We should invest in addressing the root cause, which is marginalization, poverty, gender inequality.
Many humanitarian groups at the UN and Saudi organized forum say the traditional Western donors have reduced or halted funding. The Trump administration has moved to cut tens of billions of dollars in foreign aid, though its actions face legal challenges now winding their way through the courts. Meanwhile, Lila Pakala, the director of UNICEF's supply division, says her agency is seeking $9.9 billion to help over 109 million vulnerable children and their families.
The situation of children and their families and communities worldwide, and particularly on the continent of Africa, requires immediate attention. Never before have we had so many simultaneous emergencies that require attention. This year, as we're looking at the humanitarian spectrum, we're looking at increased needs, whether it's in nutrition, whether it's around water and sanitation, access to health, and making sure children don't lose out on immunization.
She adds that resources are not keeping pace with demand.
We have increased numbers of wasting, severe acute malnutrition in children around the world, whether it's in conflict and fragile contexts or whether it's at the onset of rapid response emergencies, natural disasters, like we see in Southern Africa, where we have perennial drought and where we have floods and cyclones that are impacting children and their families. So the needs outweigh the ability to respond.
Some groups are turning to organizations such as the Saudi-based King Salman Humanitarian Aid and Relief Center for funding. Hanna Omar, KS Relief's Director of Partnerships and International Relations, says KS Relief is assisting many African countries as conflicts and climate change leave more people in need.
Unfortunately, the number of people in need is increasing, and also a lot of challenges nowadays that we see due to the funding gap, to the humanitarian access, a lot of obstacles that we see in the humanitarian world. However, we remain committed to deliver our aid, to find ways to advocate for the rights of these people and to make sure that we reach those in need.
This year, KS Relief organized the Aid Forum as it celebrated its 10th anniversary of humanitarian work outside the borders of Saudi Arabia. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Thousands of Namibians gathered on the outskirts of the capital of Bingöl last Saturday to bid farewell to the country's founding president, Sam Nujoma, who died last month in a private hospital at the age of 95. Heads of state from Southern African countries joined Namibians at the funeral for Nujoma, who led the country to independence from apartheid South Africa. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek.
As early as 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, Namibians could be seen making their way, some on foot and others in their vehicles, to the National Shrine, the Heroes Acre, on the outskirts of Windhoek. They came to pay their final respects to the man who is credited with bringing independence to the Southern African country 35 years ago. Sam Nyoma died in a Windhoek hospital on February 8th after being hospitalized for 3 weeks. Namibia's current president, Nangolo Mbumba, described Nyoma as a giant who stood firm in the country's 24-year armed struggle for independence from South Africa.
Although our hearts remain laden with grief, we take solace that President Sam Nyoma, who will now rest among his fellow illustrious heroes and heroines, has completed his mission with distinction, fulfilling his destiny and leaving behind the most precious gift of freedom and independence for the people of Namibia.
Among the VIPs in attendance Saturday were South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and Angola's President João Lourenço. Former Presidents Thabo Mbeki of South Africa and Joaquim Chissano of Mozambique could also be seen in the crowds of mourners who came to pay their last respects to the elder statesman. Nyoma was the first leader of Namibia's independence movement, the Southwest Africa People's Organization, and later served 3 terms as Namibia's president. Pendukeni Ivula Itana is his niece and a former cabinet minister who served as Namibia's attorney general. She is also vice chairperson of the Sam Nyoma Foundation.
Nyoma united the people of Namibia who were divided according to the ethnic languages during the war. Our people were made to fight against each other. At independence, he introduced a policy of national reconciliation to forgive one another as brothers and sisters.
Public servant Crispin Kapalu was also among the mourners who sang and danced as they braved the hot Namibian sun to bid farewell to the leader whose name is captured in revolutionary struggle songs like Sema Ulipeni Elule Pandela, Elule Pandela, Ola Namibia. The lyrics mean, Sam Nyoma, where are you? Raise the flag.
Growing up, we knew about Nyoma, different interpretation. But after independence, as young people, then we could see the reality why our forefathers have to sacrifice their life.
Nyoma is survived by his wife, Kovambo Nyoma, his 2 sons, 24 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren, according to the official eulogy. Sunday marked the end of 21 days of national mourning that President Pumba declared after his death. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Guinean authorities announced a reduction in the price of rice, the country's staple food, and other food items ahead of the month of Ramadan. But according to traders and consumers, the move has not changed the prices of basic food items, and they have called on the government to do more. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
Retailers and other traders say they are finding it difficult to cope with the new prices and continue to buy from their suppliers at the old prices. Mamadou So, a rice retailer, says the government's announcement has created confusion. He says customers are not coming because they say they have heard on radio that government has fixed the price of a bag of rice between 290,000 Guinean francs to 280,000 Guinean francs, or about $27 to $25. He says they are not buying it at those prices. Instead, they purchase between 290,000 Guinean francs and 288,000 Guinean francs, or between $27 to $26 from wholesalers. He says if retailers buy it at those prices and pay transportation, how they expect to sell it at government prices and still make a profit. The price of red meat, including lamb, is also at all-time high in Guinea compared to the price of chicken. But ahead of this year's month of Ramadan, the price of chicken has also skyrocketed, something traders deplored. Suleiman Barry runs a chicken shop. He says this morning his brother sent him a list of new chicken prices, and he was sad to hear that the price of imported chicken has increased during this holy month of Ramadan. He says the price of imported chicken used to buy at 250,000 Guinean francs, or about $22 per carton, now it's 270,000 Guinean francs, or about $24 per carton. He says when retailers buy it at 270,000 Guinean francs and resell it, they have to add to the price, which has an effect on their customers. Aminata Kamara, a housewife, has come to shop in the main market of Matutu, an area on the outskirts of the capital, Conakry. She says, contrary to government announcement of price reductions, prices continue to skyrocket. She says the prices of oil, rice, and tomatoes have all increased, and she says she is really in a difficult position. She says the authorities must do something to help them. She says, tell Mr. Dumbuya to help us in the name of God to reduce prices of basic food items in the holy month of Ramadan. Guinea is predominantly a Muslim state, but most Muslims are finding it difficult to put food on the table during these early days of Ramadan due to price hikes on food items. The Guinean government recently lifted taxes on imported basic food items such as rice, oil, sugar, and onions ahead of Ramadan. The government says it will send security agents to market areas to implement the new prices on basic food items and ease the burden on consumers. But it remains to be seen if the strategy will remedy the situation. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
As U.S. President Donald Trump is set to address a joint session of Congress Tuesday night, some Nigerians have expressed their views on what they say Trump and U.S. lawmakers should know about Africa.
And U.S. lawmakers, Africa should be taken more seriously and recognize the importance of fostering strong mutually beneficial relationship with African nations. So instead of focusing solely on aids and grants as it used to be, there's an opportunity through the recalibration of USAID now to, in addition to aids, investment in infrastructure, in education and other areas. So overall, President Trump and the lawmakers should look at a way of building partnership that is based on respect, like I said, cooperation and shared goals. There are a lot of areas where this can be done. And because Trump is someone who is transactional in nature, who will not come to lecture Africans on moral values, U.S. should put his money where his mouth is and look at areas where both the U.S. and the continent can benefit mutually.
So the suggestion I would give to Trump is that he should pedal down on signing these executive orders that he's signing. Africans really depend on the aid from U.S. and we really appreciate if he soften it. And so that's, I mean, we need it. And I think he also needs us as well. The United States need immigrants to work, labor, and all of that. And we also need their infrastructure, social amenities, and all. So please, and please, you should let us breathe.
The views of some Nigerians on what they think President Trump and U.S. lawmakers should know about Africa as Trump addresses a joint session of Congress today, Tuesday. M23 fighters have abducted at least 130 people from hospitals in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, city of Goma, the United Nations said on Monday. According to the UN, last week the M23 took 116 people from Goma's CBCA Undosho Hospital and 15 others from the Heal Africa Hospital on claims that they were members of the DRC's army of pro-government militias. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 20, March 4th. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington saying thank you for listening.